Yay, wonderful. Welcome everybody to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I'm just so grateful that you all are taking the time to just be here as we join together to study these ideas, because I know it helps me. It strengthens them in my mind, and I'm sure it does for you too. So let's begin with how we always do, and that is in meditation. I'm just going to make sure everybody's muted. All right, so if you are able, allowing your eyes to close. And turning attention from without to within. Allowing our attention to drop down beneath distraction, beneath mind chatter, beneath concerns, beneath worry, beneath fear. Because what is being hid by all of these things is awareness of the truth, and that is love. And so just having willingness here, together sharing this willingness to drop beneath all of these things, any form that fear shows up, to drop beneath it, to join in the love that we all are. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. Taking a nice, deep, and mindful breath in and out. I'm doing so again if you'd like. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Again, welcome everyone. It's so good to be here with all of you again. Hello, everyone on the phone. I see all of you. And we are going to be reading cameo number 10 tonight. This is called Under Instruction. And we're going to hear a lot about the miracles that Helen was directed to perform and not, based on the guidance that she received. So I really enjoy this cameo, and let's go ahead and dive in. So again, it's in the back of the CE edition, which is the purple edition, excuse me, cameo 10, page 1743. All right, actually, we're about to get started. I did want to just mention that for those of you who did not sign up for the Love Lens, the Love Lens homepage is now public. So if you go to fromanxietytolove.com/Love Lens, you now will have access to all the videos and the study guides. So that is, we have 3 episodes left, and we decided to make the videos and the study guides public because we were getting lots of requests. So that's just an FYI. It's my only announcement. Okay, let's get started. Cameo 10, Under Instruction. After the teaching that follows Miracle Principle 43, Helen took down some personal notes. These show her being extremely conscientious in giving miracles and in asking which miracles to give. These notes begin with her receiving the news of the death of Dave Diamond. In the notes leading up to the beginning of the course dictation, Helen had made an impassioned prayer that Dave accept the healing of his cancer by identifying with his spirit, not his brain. Dave then appeared in her notes twice more. Right after taking down the first three miracle principles, Helen was thinking about how impossible the healing of Dave's cancer seemed. And Jesus asked her to remember point one, referring to the first miracle principle that there is no order of difficulty among them. And as we see in Cameo 9, Jesus approved when Mrs. Albert voiced a very similar sentiment, saying, "You never can tell when God may come and say, 'Get up, Dave,' and then he will." Yet, though it may have been possible, Dave's healing did not happen, as Helen now records. And by the way, I just want to insert there, the physical healing didn't happen, but we don't know what was happening in Dave's mind. So Helen now records. Esther called to say that Dave Diamond died. Maybe that was his way of leaving the desert. Jesus, this is in brackets, Jesus had likened the world to a desert and has said, the thing to do with a desert is to leave. Dave loved Esther and Arnie Gold and the children he taught. I don't know about his own children, but I do know from Esther that he did not get along with Terry, and this is presumably his wife. A while back, she, meaning Esther, told me that Dave would not let her, Terry, into the room and kept telling her to get out. And she just hung around all day in the hallway or the lounge nearby. I went into the room under instructions and spoke to Dave, who was very groggy. Every time he opened his eyes, I said, "We all love you, so don't be afraid." Not out loud, I prayed he would be able to love everybody in return. This too was under instruction. Having been told, I think on great authority, that his only real danger came from lax in this connection. It is a touching scene, Helen telling Dave out loud, "We all love you, so don't be afraid." And then praying silently that he would be able to love everybody in return. This is how Jesus had instructed her to pray, saying that Dave's only real danger came not from being unloved, but from his own failure to love. So Helen's dictation or her notes continue. "I did not visit him on Friday, but I am sure this was right because I was very careful to ask. I was going over too after the lecture and was told not to. Perhaps there was no need to know involved." This is a reference to Jesus's version of the CIA's need to know principle, that we are only told how to find peace when we truly want peace. "I am upset about it and am leaving my notes for a while. I think I'd rather pray just now. Esther said Terry was talking about giving away the baby. I jumped to the conclusion that I was supposed to take her, but that may easily be an indiscriminate miracle impulse. I think I'd better just stop now." Helen is being astonishingly careful in asking which miracles she should give. The content of her prayer for Dave, that he be able to love everybody, was under instruction, quote unquote, under instruction. The visit in which she prayed for him was also under instructions. She did not visit him on Friday because she asked and was told not to. And she was actually on her way to visit him after a lecture when again she was told, quote unquote, told not to. Finally, she wonders if she should take the baby that Terry is considering giving away, but then she realizes this may not be under instruction. It may be a quote-unquote indiscriminate miracle impulse, an impulse to express love that, though well-intentioned, is not truly guided and thus not best for all concerned. In this case, the impulse may have been influenced by her desire for a child to fill her sense of lack, something Jesus refers to on a couple of occasions. She now continues. And I think I'm gonna pause there for a moment before we continue on. So I think just what I'll say so far, and I paused already to say this, where in the commentary it says Dave's healing did not happen. Dave died, but clearly his physical body left, but we don't know what healing took place in his mind because we just don't know that. So that's important to keep in mind. But just because the body is doing something doesn't necessarily, you know, we don't know what was going on in his mind. It is a touching scene. Helen telling Dave out loud, "We all love you, so don't be afraid." And then praying silently that he would be able to love everybody in return. This is how Jesus had instructed her to pray, saying that Dave's only real danger came not from being unloved, but from his own failure to love. So it's really touching here that we see so many instances that Helen asks for guidance. Should I go visit? Should I not go visit? And times when she's going to visit and she asks and then is told don't go, she doesn't go. So this is, I think, a nice example where we've heard, I'm just trying to think of the quote. "You tell me what to do, only that I will to do." Meaning that whatever we're told, it's only that. It's like almost looking at it in the positive and the what to do and what not to do. I'll just leave it at that. I feel like I'm about to make that confusing. She's always asking in this scenario what she should do and what she should not do. So this isn't something we often talk about, is what do I, you know, should I do this or should I not? And when the answer is no, to not do it, we're usually asking for guidance and thinking about things to do. So I think it's just important for us to keep in mind that we can ask and perhaps the answer will be no, you know, not to do something. She also realizes too that this idea of Terry considering making an adoption plan for her child, that Helen recognizes that her knee-jerk reaction to maybe want to get involved and maybe become an adoptive mom, that may not have been guided. And so she recognizes that she needs to kind of step back to regroup. The piece that we're going to pick up with is how Helen prayed. I love the idea of praying not just to God, but being guided to pray to the minds of our brothers and sisters, particularly when they're sleeping, which we'll see coming up in this little bit about her husband, which I just think is absolutely fascinating. And, you know, we have to be careful here because there's a ego opportunity to get in there and to pray to somebody's mind because we think we know what's best for them or we think we know the best outcome. This is where Helen's prayer was guided. She was told to pray to Dave's mind and to, she had received that guidance that his danger came from not being unloved, but from his own failure to love. So that was pretty touching. I do see a question. How do you know when you're asking for specific guidance that it's not just your ego responding? Courtney, that's the like the quintessential question that like I think every single course student asks. And this is where there's a lot that can be said about this. Like when we ask for guidance, how do we know it's coming from spirit versus the ego? I have a really great podcast with John Mark Stroud. It's episode number 8, I believe, where John Mark talks about the ego channel is one channel. Holy Spirit's channel is a whole different channel. So in other words, my ego channel in my head is really loud and clear because of the thoughts. So guidance usually doesn't come in that way for me. It doesn't usually come in for a thought. Guidance comes in with a different channel, like a feeling. So rather than listen to my thoughts, I'm going to tune into my body and sort of feel into my heart area, feel into my guts, which is a different channel that I, you know, than where the ego usually lives, which is usually in my head. And so I can kind of distinguish it that way. Sometimes we just don't know. And that is when I go back to remembering that if we are handing everything, and I mean everything, over to Holy Spirit, we're withholding nothing for our small self to, you know, make a mess of. If we're handing everything over, even if we're not sure what the guidance is, if we're handing it all over, we can be sure that whatever ego is there when we are taking our steps is going to fall away. It's going to fall away because we're handing it, we're repurposing everything. We're handing it all over. So that's my short answer to that that question. And thank you for that question. And Kim said that podcast is super helpful. So I'm glad. Thank you for chiming in, Kim. I love that podcast too. It's a good one. Before I keep reading, does anybody have any questions or brief comments?
Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Nikki.
I'm almost cracking up laughing. I've had three instances where I was trying to help people, two homeless people and a recently widowed person. And it is my natural instinct, if I see somebody suffering or in need, to just go and do. My family, you know, makes fun of me sometimes. And three times in a row in 2 weeks, I got rejected. Like, no, I don't want your food. No, I don't want your hat. Is that wool? Right. So I took it in stride today and I was like, okay, universe is trying to tell me something. But I thought that universe was trying to tell me that I should be helping because I feel called to it, but a whole different way. And then we go into this cameo. It's like, no, universe is telling me, stop and ask me first.
I love that.
Oh, okay. I will. Because even the most seemingly 10 out of 10 dentists would agree that's the right thing to do. No, universe wants me to do it differently.
Oh, what so. You just said about 10 out of 10 dentists agree, and yet we're still prompted to ask the Holy Spirit. Yes. That's beautiful, so, Nikki.
Thank you for this group and thank you for the answers.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that beautiful example. That's awesome. Oh, anybody else want to chime in before we keep reading? Tracy and Mike. Hi, Tracy.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
This group is awesome. I've been listening to the recordings for a long time. And like, I feel, it's weird. I feel like I know a lot of you just because I've heard your voices and it's cool.
Aww.
And it's so amazing. All the insights, I mean, it's really priceless. I mean, like the fact that you guys went through the entire text is crazy. And this is awesome. A live study group are still going, but there's just so many nuggets of insights. And I thank everybody for sharing and so awesome. But anyway, I also want to say in your podcast with Alan Cohen, he says a nice thing about the ego voice having a dense, heavy, overbearing vibration, like that heaviness. And he talks about that, knowing your friend's voice who calls. In that podcast, another good one.
Right.
But whenever you read about that indiscriminate miracle impulse, it made me think of the love lens, how, and just in general, when we want to just throw a blanket course quote out, you know, that it is well-intentioned, but not truly guided.
Yes. And
not best for all concerned, you know. So that made me think of that. And thanks for your work on the love lens. It's like, it's huge. But anyway, thank you.
Tracy and Mike, thank you so much for sharing. And I love that you shared that you feel like you know so many of the people in the group because you've been tuning in, as you know, in our extended family for so long. So that's really awesome. And I too love everybody's insights and sharing in this group because this is for me too. Like, this is why I've said so many times, like, I just don't want to talk for an hour because number one, I'd be bored, but we all learn from each other. This is truly a shared opportunity for healing. So thank you for sharing that. And then, with the indiscriminate miracle impulses, and you're right. I love that you made that connection with the love lens, that just throwing out a course quote. I think that comes clearly not from guidance if it's being received in a hurtful way, in a way that's not helpful. So thank you for just shouting out the love ones again. I It is big. Nothing like it has been done before with A Course in Miracles, and I feel like the trickle effect, the vibrations, the reverberations from the program are going to be very long lasting and are just, you know, beginning to spread. So thank you for sharing. It's really awesome. Thank you. Yay. Oh, all right. Let's keep reading. So we left off the top of page 1745. She now continues, I prayed for Dave and said that whatever miracles I could do for him, even now, or any of his family, I would will to do. I also asked Jesus to help Dave with the course. So the commentary continues, notice how she corrects her earlier mistake of jumping to the conclusion that she should take the baby. She now broadens her miracle impulse, making it much more general and leaving the specifics up to Jesus. Her new prayer is a variation on the prayer that sparked her earlier experience of revelation, which was, Lord, I will leave my desire to help him in your hands. If you will tell me what to do, I will to do it. She even asked Jesus to help Dave with the course. This implies that even though Dave is no longer in the body, Jesus can still help him learn that crucial lesson of loving everybody in return via the same principles that he is imparting to Helen. So Helen writes, then I was told to go in and visit Jonathan, who is her husband, Lewis. We read about her name changing tendencies, I think, last week. So then I was told to go in and visit with Jonathan, her husband, Lewis, and pray for him, particularly if he was asleep, which he was. It was the only time so far I prayed intensely for him. When this happens, I am strongly aware that I am not praying alone. We told Jonathan that he should forget about the Alexandrian Library and all the rest because it does not matter. He showed a lot of love this time and should claim his forgiveness. He does not need to hurt himself and must stop these symptoms of disequilibrium and establish his freedom. He woke up and he said he was feeling better, but hungry. So the commentary continues, now Helen is told to pray for her husband while he sleeps. It's as if during his sleep, the wall of his conscious defenses comes down, allowing her to get a message through to a deeper level of his mind. Interestingly, she had earlier written down the same idea in regard to praying for Dave. And in quotes, maybe while Dave is sleeping, our unconscious minds can reach Christ and he will unite us in prayer. Lewis has apparently taken a nap because he is not feeling well. He is experiencing symptoms of disequilibrium. Helen's prayer implies that this disequilibrium is a case of needless self-punishment over past life transgressions. Actually, her earlier prayer for Dave had implied the same thing about Dave's cancer, that it was the result of Dave, in the past, somehow interfering with the progress of someone he met again in this life. Helen's prayer implies that Lewis's transgressions involved the Alexandrian Library, the repository of the wisdom of the ancient world that was famously destroyed, possibly on four separate occasions. One is tempted to speculate that Lewis's career as a bookstore owner selling used, rare, and out-of-print books was an unconscious attempt to make up for whatever role he may have played in the destruction of the Alexandrian Library. Helen reports that she prays for him intensely and that she is strongly aware of being joined by Jesus in this. Her prayer for Lewis is strikingly reminiscent of the earlier prayer for Dave, which lets us glimpse a unique approach to praying for others. In both cases, Helen silently addresses the prayer not to God, but to the person himself. She speaks to him at an unconscious level about the beliefs that he is not conscious of, but that are the real source of his problem. The prayer is an intense and impassioned one, in which she earnestly tries to persuade him to let go of those beliefs. And as mentioned earlier, she does not do this on her own. Rather than her thoughts being formulated by her, they are apparently being inspired by Jesus, who, in Lewis's case, actually joins her in the prayer. The message that she and Jesus give to Lewis is one of freedom from the past. They tell him that he should forget about any wrongdoing from long ago because it does not matter. He has shown a lot of love in this life, and he should just claim his forgiveness. Rather than continuing to hurt himself over ancient misdeeds, he must establish his freedom. Okay, we're going to pause there before we keep reading. So isn't this so interesting? This idea about a past life where Lewis may have taken part in the destruction of the Alexandrian Library, and here he is in this lifetime being a bookstore owner who sells used, rare, and out of print books. Like, that just, that's fascinating to me. It says here, now we're introduced to this way of praying where Helen is prompted to pray to the mind of the other person, but she's not prompted to do this, you know, by herself. This is clearly guidance. And I have to just say, I may have shared this in previous calls. I remember very, very distinctly, and I'm wondering if anybody else has ever felt a strong prompt to pray for someone or something. I had this recently, and I can't remember who it was for. I've had this a few times. It usually happens for me in the middle of the night. And I remember one time being woken up, and this is what I've shared before. It was like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I just woke up. And this is at least, I don't even know how many years ago, 15 or so years ago, when Britney Spears was like having this mental health downward spiral and she shaved her head. I've never been a Britney Spears fan, never. So to be woken up and to get this strong, overpowering feeling to pray for Britney Spears, I was literally like, okay, and like got to work praying for Britney Spears. Like, I was not a fan, so it wasn't like she was on my mind or anything. It literally came out of the blue. And that's kind of the strongest example that I can think of this, you know, really strong guidance to pray, but for somebody. But I also, can remember recently, like I've had impulses to pray for certain politicians, you know, to, I mean, I guess all politicians can use more love. I'm just wondering if anybody has any thoughts surrounding this, and if anybody has ever experienced that prompt to pray for somebody else or for something. Or any other comments or questions that might be on your mind.
I have.
Okay. Please share.
Oh, I get it a lot I do this thing called Reiki, and I'll just be minding my business and I'll get a strong feeling. But the most unique one was I had a client once, and I was doing yoga at home, and he was in his life. He was at school as a young kid, 20 some year old kid, and especially in school. And all of a sudden I was doing yoga, and I looked over the side and I said, stop.
Oh, you just went on mute by accident.
And
there you go.
When I conferred with the dad, at that exact time he was in yoga in his school, right? Didn't even know that. And somebody was distracting him, and he was getting upset and yelled stop to them, and then was going to get suspended from school. But luckily, maybe because of the prayer, it calmed things down and the situation de-escalated.
Well, and you didn't know that at the time?
I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
No, I only saw him once a week at night. I don't know what his regular day schedule was, but because it was so clearly for him, I called the dad and said, and he goes, I don't know. Max is in school. Oh, so he's in school. I don't know. And turned out.
Wow.
Crazy.
That is. No mistakes. No mistakes there at all. You know, I feel prompted to just share this. You mentioned Reiki. I've mentioned it in the past. It's probably been a while since I've said this, but I've really, in the past, I used to really be like not into angels, thinking like, okay, the course isn't out there for me, but angels are really out there for me. And I'm not there at all anymore because I've really opened to how the course references angels. And you mentioned Reiki. So what I want to share, and I will, maybe when we're talking, I'll try to find the link and I'll share it in the chat. And then I'll also put it in the Facebook comments under this video. There is this angelic Reiki meditation. So it's bringing together Reiki and angels that I've been doing for like in the past week. I've probably done it like 5 nights out of 7 because I'm just finding it to be incredibly powerful. I've been doing it at nighttime before sleep. And it's basically this, I don't know if he's Irish or Scottish or what his accent is, but he's some kind of angel Reiki practitioner and is calling on the angels to basically help you. It's like a healing meditation and I found it incredibly powerful. So I'll be sure to, maybe when we're chatting, I will put it in. It's not Kyle Gray. I'll try to find it and I'll put it in the chat, but I'll definitely put it, if I can't find it before the end of the group, I'll put it in the comments under this video in the Facebook group. So I just felt moved to share that. There, that was guidance that I felt moved to share that in case it's helpful for anybody. So thank you, Nikki, because you brought up Reiki and shared that powerful example.
Hey, Corinne.
Yes.
Hey, hi, Corinne. I have a question or maybe more of a clarifying comment, but would you say when you're asked or have this guidance to pray for someone else, it really is a guidance to pray for your own healing as well, because of course we're all the one mind. So it's kind of the Holy Spirit working through you to pray for someone else's awakening, which is also yours.
It's both. Yep. Because there's that interpersonal nature. That's what makes A Course in Miracles unique. And that's what a miracle is. Both are healed. It's not just, you know, the other person. It's maybe the other person experiences that miracle and it reawakens the truth in your mind too. So it's always both of us, definitely. And beyond, because as we'll see in this cameo, it goes on to say that, oh, we still have a good couple of pages to go. It'll actually speak to that about how miracles, I think it talks about how they're impersonal. So as we get into that miracle-minded headspace, it's going to be helpful to anybody who is receptive to receiving it, not just that one other person that you might have in mind. So we're actually going to go there in this cameo. So thank you, Courtney. Great clarification. Martin.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Just wanted to point out, you know, that quote you were searching for a few minutes ago, you read right through it. I wonder if you caught it or not. If you will tell me what to do, I will to do it.
There it was right there. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I love that.
No problem. And what speaks to me there is how much power we have to get the miracle across.
Yeah.
I will to do it instead of I'll do it. I will. That's where the power comes from.
And that's where we can really claim our will. We can really claim. I mean, our minds have created this world. Like our minds are very, very powerful. And we tend to walk around thinking like, ho-hum, like, you know, just me. And yet when we can bring our will into alignment with God's will, which is the same thing, there's a lot of beautiful miracle working power in that.
I think we're afraid of our power. That's why we tend to.
Yep. For sure.
Go away.
Anyway, procrastinate, dilly dally. Yeah.
Yep. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Martin. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
Oh, how about we keep reading? It's funny. When I flipped the page, I thought we only had the next page, but I see that I must have flipped 2 pages instead of just one. So we have a little bit more to go, which is cool because we have plenty of time. All right. Oh, wait, no. Hold on. I think I'm wrong. I think I was just on the wrong page. I think we do only have one more. I was on the wrong page. Sorry. We've just finished with, rather than continuing to hurt himself over ancient misdeeds, he must establish his freedom. That's where we just paused, right? Thank you. Okay. We don't have that much reading left. The prayer may indeed have worked, since Lewis wakes up feeling better. He's hungry, so Helen apparently makes him some dinner. She then says, "I was going to wash my hair after fixing his dinner, but I was told to visit his mother. Am not too enthusiastic about this, but am going now. It occurred to me while waiting for the elevator that I was glad I was going because it was a way of atoning to Jonathan for my being so nasty to him. In parentheses, he is always happy to have me visit his mother. And in a way of atoning for Dave, too." Helen has planned to wash her hair, perhaps to have some nice me time. But Jesus has other plans, telling her instead to go and visit her mother-in-law. Miracle working apparently takes precedence over hair washing. She is understandably not too enthusiastic about this, but to her credit, she goes anyway. Then, while waiting for the elevator, she has a surprising change of attitude. She decides she is actually glad to be going, since it is a way of atoning to her husband for my being so nasty to him. This does not mean that she is paying off a debt through enforced labor. In this early material, atonement often takes the form of wiping away the past by giving love where we once gave hate. The light of love in the present shines away the imaginary darkness from the past. Thus, as the workbook will say later, each gift we give a brother allows a past mistake to go and leave no shadow on the holy mind our Father loves. Then Helen has an additional thought. Visiting her mother-in-law doesn't just atone for her own past lovelessness. It atones for Dave's as well. But how can her actions atone for Dave? At this point, Jesus apparently steps in and explains why. The impersonal nature of miracles is because atonement itself is one. By being one, it unites all creations with their creator. Miracles arise from a miraculous state of mind. This state of mind goes out to anyone, even without the awareness of the miracle worker himself. Helen's loving act can wipe away Dave's past lovelessness because of what miracles really are. A miracle may be given to a particular person, but it arises from a state that holds in mind everyone's equal worthiness. That is why it is quote unquote impersonal. It goes out to someone not because of anything that is personal to her. It goes out because of the universal in her. In a very real sense, then, it goes out non-specifically and can be channeled to wherever there is openness and need. And in quotes, the state of mind goes out to anyone, even without the awareness of the miracle worker himself. Helen's miracle may seem to be aimed at Lewis and his mother, but in truth, it is aimed at everyone. That is why Dave can benefit too. Here, as in the cameo about Mrs. Albert, we see a real-life snapshot of a miracle worker in action. Yet while Jesus presents Mrs. Albert as a contrast to Helen, here the miracle worker is Helen. She comes off as an inspiring source of blessing to the people around her. We see her visiting a dying friend, praying that this friend can truly learn to love, praying to help his family however she can, to the point of wondering if she should adopt their baby, praying intensely for her husband to stop punishing himself, and visiting her mother-in-law instead of staying home to wash her hair. All of this flows from a remarkable conscientiousness in Helen regarding following her inner direction. The visits to Dave and her mother-in-law come from her following her guidance, as do her prayers for Dave and her husband. She is even careful not to try to give miracles where she is not told to. If Helen is an object lesson for us here, the lesson is that miracle working comes from being under instruction. And that concludes Cameo 10. So I'm touched by this bit here about visiting her mother-in-law. It reminds me how we've talked about, and in the course we've read about miracle impulses, that these miracle impulses are trying to get through to our consciousness all the time. They're constantly trying to come up. They get distorted, whatnot. And I can think of times when I've had miracle impulses come up. I can think of some specific times being in the car back in the days before COVID when I actually drove somewhere. And I'd have this feeling of like, oh, I have this feeling of love. I should call this family member because I want to, you know, express love. I just had this impulse to pick up the phone and call them. But then my head would get in the way. And my head would say, if you call them, you know probably what they're going to start complaining about, where the conversation's going to go, and maybe let's not call them. So it was literally like the loving impulse was there, and I'd squash it with my head and with my, you know, lack of desire to want to potentially be in a conversation where I didn't, you know, perhaps like where the topic of conversation was going. So here we have an example for Helen, where she plans to be washing her hair, but instead she's told to visit her husband's mother, her mother-in-law. She says she's not too enthusiastic about this, but she's going. So imagine just like the prompts that we might have throughout the day that maybe we don't even realize could be miracle impulses, could be guidance coming through, because we're like, not enthusiastic about that. Don't feel it right now. Don't want to do that right now. And instead, if we could utilize this mindfulness, this careful conscientiousness that Helen is exhibiting in this cameo, where she's able to recognize that she's not enthusiastic about this, but the prompt just came through to go visit her mother-in-law, and so she does it. So it's all in line with that sentence that Martin highlighted for us, that which you tell me to do, I will to do. And what we are not asked to do, we won't do. So I'm very touched by that piece about her mother-in-law. And she says, also, it goes on to say that she feels that, where did it go about atoning? It's a way of atoning to Jonathan for my being so nasty to him. He is always happy to have me visit his mother. And in a way of atoning for Dave too. So it's an act of kindness. You know, Helen's husband loves it when she visits his mom. So she's actually doing something loving for him by visiting his mom. And this idea, and Courtney brought this up before, about the interpersonal piece, that atoning for Dave, because this miracle mindedness goes out non-specifically and it's channeled to wherever there's openness and need. So how beautiful is that? So I just love thinking about that for all of us too, who are miracle workers, who are wanting to be miracle workers and are stepping into this role in the world, that we're helping those other minds, and we have no idea who those other minds are that may need our blessing. And we are giving that blessing when we are in this state of miracle mindedness, of this open receptivity. And this miracle working comes, as this sentence, as this cameo concludes, from being under instruction. So that's really the key, is to allow ourselves to be under instruction and to listen. And it means having to utilize this very conscientious mindfulness in noticing what's coming up. Like if I could, I think even a time I remember noticing that miracle impulse to pick up the phone and call a family member. And I noticed that I was like, meh, not going to do it. But it is mindfulness that we need to be able to see these things, to notice them. Did somebody want to jump in and share or ask a question?
Corinne?
Yes.
Hey, Suma. Hey, okay, so that sentence really jumped out at me, that the impersonal nature of miracles is because atonement itself is one. By being one, it unites all creations with their creator. Do you know this course? I guess he's a course teacher, Dr. Rod Chelberg. He's a friend of John Mundy's.
Yes. I don't know him personally, but I know of him.
So I'm 99% sure that the story is from him. I remember him talking about this earlier this year. He was an ER doctor for several decades, and he had this huge personal crisis happen, and then he started studying the course, and Jesus started showing up and guiding him in a very distinct, clear way in the ER. So people would come in and he would hear Jesus tell him to like run such and such lab test, and it would be a totally random lab test that you would never actually run in that situation, but then it would end up, you know, saving that person's life. But one of the things I think that he said is that he was instructed to forgive, and then that would heal the patient. And it's one of the things that really stuck out to me, because it was like this one-to-one thing where he was like, oh, you know, if you want to heal this woman who just got wheeled into the ER, you know, forgive your wife. And, or I don't remember, but it was, you know, something specific. It was this like one-to-one thing where he would hear this guidance. And it just really made such an impact on me that it's like, what does his forgiveness have to do with this random stranger's, you know, illness or injury or whatever in the ER, but that's what he was instructed to do. So yeah, this thing about miracles being impersonal, just, it really reminded me of him.
That's absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing that, Uma, because I had not heard that specific piece before about, like, if you want to heal this, you know, person of their whatever problem, forgive your wife or forgive, you know, whoever, that it would be that specific. That's incredible. You reminded me too, and I'm sure most of you might be familiar with Dr. E. Haleakala Hugh Len, who is the, I don't think he didn't come up with Ho'oponopono, but is a known, you know, teacher of it. And similarly, although I don't think specifically like you just gave, he healed a ward of psychiatric patients through this forgiveness of his own cleaning, you know, of his own mind with that. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. So never even met the patients, but helped them by, you know, by practicing that forgiveness and that cleaning in his own mind. So that's really cool. You know, to add to what you just said, there's another doctor. I don't know if he knows Dr. Chelberg, but his name is Scott Kolbaba, and he wrote a book called Physicians Untold Stories. And I remember the first story in that book had to do with, well, the whole book is a collection of doctors having experiences like that, who are too hesitant to just like say this in the medical community. So he compiled stories and put it in this book. But one of them was, you know, this prompt, this just inner guidance to bring this patient back in who wasn't having symptoms that would warrant a specific test, but the guidance was so strong to do this test that doing that test then uncovered, you know, maybe, I don't remember if it was like the patient was on the brink of having a heart attack or something like that. So how awesome is it to hear that there are some doctors out there that are really tuning in? That's really cool. So thank you, Uma. Oh, John.
Hi, I was just curious about the one line in there too, where it says, this does not mean that she is paying off a debt through enforced labor. So is that referring to like past karmic actions where, I mean, in karma, you come back, you know, into your caste or whatever that, you know, if you pay off your labor in that caste, then you'll get to a higher caste as you're as you go on.
Can you show me where you are, John? I just want to read it.
It's on 1747, about the middle of the page, the fourth paragraph.
So it's a way of atoning for her husband for being so nasty to him. This does not mean that she's paying off a debt through enforced labor.
I think that has to do with karma, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think
a lot of time we think we have to do something to get rid of bad karma.
Right.
You know, so we have to pay it back. So it's not enforced.
Right. It's just... Yeah, I think you're right about that kind of referring to karma in that sense. It goes on to say, in this early material, atonement often takes the form of wiping away the past by giving love where we once gave hate. So it's like another opportunity to choose again, basically. But I agree with you that that is referring to what sounds like karma.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else?
I think there's joy in that because you're cleaning not only somebody else's slate, speaking of karma, you're also cleaning your own. So it's for everybody.
Yeah, it is for everybody.
It's impersonal.
Yes. And I like to think of karma, you know, not in this traditional sense of like, you know, you did something a long time ago and now you're being punished for it. No, like it's if I have that thought system, that fearful thought system still in my mind now, what was wreaking havoc before is still wreaking havoc now. And so let me choose again and, you know, express love instead of expressing hate or fear. So thus we are all freed. I feel like I may have more to say. Let me see. And feel free if anybody else has. Oh, there are. Kim, yes, I will put those names in the chat. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Dr. Scott Kolbaba, I'm writing in. He wrote Physicians Untold Stories. And then what was the one, Uma, that you just mentioned? What was his name? Dr. Ron?
It's Dr. Rod Chelberg.
R-O-D, Rod?
Rod.
Chelberg. Yeah. Got it. And
his book is called When God Calls, Say Yes.
Cool. Thank you so much. Oh, hi, Carla. You always pop up at the end. There's Carla. Oh, anybody else have a comment or a question? Hi, Paula. I hear your kitty.
Oh, she's very active tonight.
I love her.
I do too. You know, it seems to me, just thinking about this discussion, I get so involved in busyness during the day, and I'll get an idea that something will come in my mind that, oh, geez, I want to make. Maybe I was thinking I would love to make some pumpkin bread and just go around the neighborhood and give it to neighbors, because right now with COVID, we're all inside. It's also, I just feel like reaching out. But I notice how the ego will get in there and it's like, yeah, but I've got to do this first, or I've got to, you know, and it's just is so good tonight to really get you to become aware of just slow it down. You know, just do it. I think a fear of rejection comes into for me a lot of times. I think that's in the back of it, you know, that, oh well, if I knock on the door they might spit in my face or something. I mean, I never know. I just never know how it's gonna go. And I really think that just, you know, pondering on this, I have fear of this.
And it's always some form of fear that's going to squash the miracle impulse. Yeah. And how cool would it be to just experiment for one day or even 1 hour? Like if one day feels like way too much, just to experiment and be like, okay, what I feel prompted to do from that space of love within, I'm going to make space for that today. You know, I'm going to do that. I'm going to follow through. And just even once, like even just committing to like, okay, next time I notice that, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, make space and see what happens. Because my guess is that we're going to find that that's where our joy is, you know,
absolutely.
When we're feeling, I mean, like I've said before, like this year has been tough on so many different levels. And to feel a prompt like that and then to follow through, I think is going to be healing, not just for the, again, for you, but for impersonally, for the other people you touch and people who you don't even know.
I'm going to do it.
Yay.
I'm definitely going to do it.
Awesome. Awesome.
This is wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. That's why I love this cameo. I just love it because it's, I mean, Helen is so tuned in with being under instruction. She did so many of these things under instruction. I have to tell you also, I mean, when I was reading this, I had this memory come back. I believe I shared a little bit about this when it happened, but I had a friend who I really became, we were more acquaintances for years because we went to the same grad school program together. And then it was only when she was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer that our friendship really started getting close. And she let me in to her dying process, to being there, you know, the day, 2 days before she died. I think I was with her on a Friday and she died on Sunday. I remember on Friday that she wanted me to come over because she had this YouTube channel. She was making videos about the dying process, like helping people till the very end. And I remember on that Friday, I had like a ton on my plate and I was so overwhelmed. And I was like, I should maybe wait and just tell her I'm going to come on Monday. And my God, I'm so glad that I listened to that prompt to go that day, because having to then live with, you know, oh my gosh, I chose work instead of going to see her. That would have been my last time. Like, I'm so grateful that I listened to that prompt to just be like, Jesus is going to help me with the work. I'm going to get it done. I'm prompted to go see, to drop everything and go see her. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm just so grateful for that. So, yeah, it's a challenge to all of us to listen, to really listen to these miracle impulses and to be brave enough to follow through with them, even when they seem, even when they trigger our fears, because that's the ego getting, that's the ego's antidote to the miracle impulse, is to give you a fear that matches, that's like the flip side of the miracle impulse. So the miracle impulse is to give, all right, fear of rejection. The miracle impulse is to speak up, all right, fear of getting attacked. Like the ego's ready. it's absolutely ready to toss a fear that's going to squash that specific miracle impulse. And it's up to us to remember this prayer that Helen says, you know, that which you want me to do, I will to do it. I keep saying a different version of that every time, but you know what I'm talking about. Only that I will to do. We go back to that. And it's like, we can anchor ourselves into that feeling and into those words and act then from that space and be miracle workers, because we are needed. We are needed.
Mm-hmm. No, I actually had an experience just yesterday, just thought about it, where we were watching something on TV, my bride and I, and she a song came on the TV or something, and it was a really pretty classical music song. And she's like, do you want to dance? And I looked and I thought, I don't want to dance. And then I was like, yeah, I do want to dance. Like, no, I do. It's like, you know, she doesn't ever usually ask me that, you know, especially nowadays. Oh. So we got up and we danced for a little while. And it was nice, you know. So yeah, we definitely have to listen to that inner voice.
That's beautiful, John. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's listening to that inner voice and making space for it, because we can get, this has been one of the big things, just I feel like on a global level, that COVID is trying to teach us, is to slow down, to really slow down. What are we in a rush towards, you know? So yeah. Thank you for that, John.
And you're welcome.
Dave.
Just wondering how many more of the cameos are left?
Great question. So we're on 10, and I want to say there's like 30. There are 33. So we have a while to go.
Cool.
Yeah, it's fun though. I enjoy doing one per week because it feels, some are longer, some are shorter. So sometimes we have more reading and less reading, but it's a nice, I feel like it's a nice balance to having spent a long time taking it one paragraph at a time, which is why it took us 9 years to get through the text. All right, everyone. Well, I didn't have a chance to look up that angelic Reiki meditation while we are together, so I will put that in the caption of this video in the Facebook group. And if you're not in the Facebook group, just email me if you want it, and I can send it to you via email. It's, like I said, a meditation that I've been doing a lot lately, and I've been finding it very helpful. So I love you all. Have a great rest of your evening, a great week, and I'll see you in 1 week.
We love you.
You too. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Love you all. Bye.